Welcome to Parents Perspective. Don't cry. 6-year-old Kimmy tried to console her 4-year-old brother, Kyle. If you stop crying, I'll give you 3 of my best bracelets. Kyle blinked at his sister, wide-eyed through his tears. But you like those, he croaked. Yes, Kimmy replied matter-of-factly. But if you promise to stop crying, I will give them to you for a whole day. Kyle continued to whimper, but his tear-stained face registered a look of gratitude. You know, continued Kimmy, trying to prop her brother's scraped knee onto a sofa pillow, I might even let you have the bracelets forever, or like till you're 13. From a parent's perspective, how can we raise thoughtful children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is the author of the New Baby Answer book and has published articles on a number of different parenting issues. Dr. Robin Goldstein is a specialist in child and adolescent development and teaches at Johns Hopkins University and the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. She's the author of several books, including the most recent New Baby Answer book, and frequently leads seminars on parenting. She helps parents with the everyday challenges of raising children and has contributed to parenting articles in magazines as well. Dr. Goldstein is the mother of 2 grown children. Welcome to Parents Perspective.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What would you say is the biggest myth about kids' altruistic behavior?
Well, to be altruistic, you're really not showing self-centered behavior. It's really about selflessness. And it's about caring about somebody else. And as a child development specialist and as someone who's so interested in how children think, I have certainly learned along the way that it takes years, lots of training and lots of patience for children to learn how to care about other people, including their feelings, their wants, and their needs.
On the other hand, you see wonderful little vignettes where little kids under kindergarten age are doing very thoughtful things. How does that come about?
Typically, that comes about not so much from the heart in a genuine way. Like, I really can put myself in your position and really know what that feels like. It comes more from a place of modeling. It is so important that parents model the kind of behaviors that they want to see their children follow. So, for example, when a parent says, thank you for sharing your toys with your sister or your friend, a child learns that that's valued by a parent, and children want to please their parents. And so as that continues and parents show that they're pleased with that kind of behavior, children want to practice it. It doesn't mean that they feel it, but they practice it. And then we try to respond as parents by saying, good job. Nicely done. Thanks for doing that.
We were going to talk about a parent's greatest challenge in promoting our children's thoughtful behavior. Is there something that gets in the way of this all the time?
Big thing that gets in the way is really understanding why children can't be so kind and thoughtful.
Why did Johnny steal Timmy's truck?
Yes, because he wanted to. Because he wanted it. And that's really a place that children come from. And if we understand it, we can almost think of this, if you don't mind me saying this, as delightful, because it just happens during, typically, sort of we see these kinds of behaviors in children who are 7 and under or 6 and under. And so when children simply say to each other when they're kind of bickering, well, you're not my friend anymore, and you're not coming to my birthday party, that's not very thoughtful. Right? And we as parents and as adults, as teachers, as coaches, kind of are so alarmed by the, like, that hurts her feelings. Mm-hmm. But a child says it and feels no sense of remorse. A child doesn't stop and say, oh my gosh, what did I just say? Or I'm looking at her, my friend, upset now. Maybe I said something that hurt her feelings. It's kind of like, you know, you didn't do that for me, or you didn't share your toy, or I just don't want you to come to my birthday party. I just don't want you to be my friend anymore. They just say what is at the surface, and they don't yet, as young children, have that real capacity to feel guilt and shame and remorse.
So if you're the parent hearing your child say something lovely like you just mentioned,
yes,
then what do you do?
You just pause for a moment and just pause and try to a little bit put it in a developmental context. And then what we tend to do too much of is explain to children why we don't like what they just did or said. So we give them lots of sermons. You wouldn't like it if she treated you that way, those kinds of sermons. What we want to do is just get to our point a little faster and move on. So get to a point where we say, she doesn't want you to say that to her. She wants to hear that you are inviting her to your birthday party. Or set a limit and say, I'm going to ask you to tell her that she is invited to your birthday party because she is invited. And so treat it like it's a limit-setting opportunity. If we give them too many sermons, then they lose focus. They can't really process all of that.
How young can children really be capable of altruism?
Consistently, 6-ish. I guess I could say 5-ish. You know, even Aristotle said, you know, the age of logic and reasoning is somewhere around age 7. So it takes a while for children to learn it, and which is why when I say patience, pausing, and reminding children, setting limits, it takes years to learn it. They can learn it. They come into the world wired to learn how to be thoughtful, how to do the right thing. But we just really need to give them time to learn it. So that when we say to children, how many times have I told you not to do that to your brother? Gosh, so many times, right? And many more times to come. They need so many reminders, but that's okay. That's okay. That's what they need in order to help them learn how to be kind and thoughtful children.
I'm watching my little 20-month-old grandson learn about please and thank you, which he now uses consistently. I'm not positive that he fully understands why, but he does use them. He does understand where and when to use them. So I guess it's the beginning.
It's the beginning, and it's a lot of, I would guess, that there are a lot of reminders and that the parents are really tuned in to saying, to modeling, please and thank you. It's really just not going to come from nowhere. It's got to come from practice and modeling.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on thoughtfulness in children.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Robin Goldstein about children's thoughtfulness. What about birthdays and holidays and times when we particularly expect this altruistic stuff to come out? How can we prepare children?
I keep coming back to preparing ourselves as parents because I'm thinking about the 4-year-old, the 5-year-old birthday party, and the child opens a gift and says, I don't want that, or I already have that one, or opens it quickly and then puts it to the side because they're just not that interested and they're ready for the next one. Children, again, just sort of speak from the place that they come from, which is, again, just a wonderful part of children because it's really temporary. So we have to be prepared as adults. And so we step in, as parents typically do, and say, so we can say, let's look at that gift again. And we just orchestrate it so that it is more mindful to the children who are there and to the other parents who are there. It's not to lecture children. It's just to model.
There's been a change, I think, because I have grandchildren who are having birthday parties, little grandchildren. Never have they opened gifts at the party. It's completely different from what it was like when my children were little. I think it's much better.
Much
better. The gifts are sort of put aside, and the children are supposed to say thank you when they're handed to them, but there's no focus on the gifts at the party.
Well, maybe we've learned along the way that that becomes a real difficult aspect because of these issues of say thank you, give it a little bit of attention. Please don't just put it in the corner. Don't throw it off to the side. Please don't open it halfway up and see that it's something you don't want.
Or already have three of.
Or already have three of, exactly.
I remember grappling with that when my kids were little and finally coming to the compromise of when the birthday child was opening his or her presents, that the giver was also getting a present. You know, that was the time the giver got a present, whatever it was, you know. But this materialistic stuff, are we more a society of materialism? Is that working against our altruistic tendencies to help our children?
Well, that's an interesting question. I tend to think that we are, yes, a materialistic society, but I don't think that it necessarily contributes to this bigger issue of altruism. I think that parents are busy. And children need an enormous amount of guidance, and they need to be taught. And parents also need to know that things happen differently for a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old. A 5-year-old takes in things differently from a 10-year-old. And I think it's more of an issue of parents needing to give more time to thoughtfulness, really, to this issue themselves. And really understanding that it's a gradual learning process, but that they play a very critical and important role, they meaning parents, in helping their children learn how to be thoughtful and to get good practice at being thoughtful. And I'm not sure we're seeing a lot of very busy parents who are not just busy during the day, but, you know, we have our cell phones that are great distraction, computers, and other interests that tend to keep us away from doing some of these really necessary and important teachings. A story that comes to mind is a parent who said to me that her 4-year-old was invited to a birthday party. And the morning of the party, he got sick. And so she called to tell the mom that her son would not be going to the birthday party because he was sick. And the birthday party boy answered the phone and was told that this little guy wasn't going to come to your birthday party because he wasn't feeling well. And the birthday boy said, "Oh, goody, now we'll have enough chairs. I'll go tell my daddy." And he hung up.
Oh, no.
So the point of that story is the either, oh, my gosh, or isn't that what children will say and do because they can't understand the feelings of someone else, especially when they're in a moment of dealing with something that's going on with them? So he was about at that moment setting up chairs where mom or dad were saying, "Wow, we don't have enough chairs." And so he got the phone call at the right time. Hearing his child isn't able to come, and goody, now we'll have enough chairs. Didn't mean goody, I don't like your son. Just didn't have the ability to say, "Oh dear, I hope he feels better." That's just not what we hear from young children. So the more we understand about their thinking, the more we can smile and go along and not be so upset by their normal place of thinking at 4 and 5 and 10 and 15.
They're not little miniature grown-ups, but they can learn.
They can learn. And they're getting there slowly. Yes.
Siblings have more trouble with thoughtfulness when they're little. Of course, you have the sibling, the typical rivalry that goes on where if one child is being in the spotlight, the other wants to rob the spotlight from that child. But then as they get a little bit older, I would assume they incorporate some of the thoughtfulness into that relationship.
Yes, siblings respond to the fact that from their perspective, one may seem as if they're getting more attention than the other. It's really about the child's perspective. I tend to believe that, again, parents may spend a little too much time either ignoring sibling rivalry or discussing it too much. I think we need to set more limits. I think we need to say, "I'm not going to let you treat your brother like that. So you need to stop." and that's it, and then move on. Or you need to include your sister in your play because I've asked you to, or because those are the values in our family. We just include everybody. And again, I think that there's a lot of advice and suggestions out there that's about ignore it, it's typical. It is typical, but if we don't set limits on it, then it's almost as if we're giving them silent permission to continue the bickering. The other thing I just wanted to mention in this is that when children do reach that age of 6 or 7, they show this ability to think about somebody else's feelings. And that's when we sort of move from the limit setting to really getting more, not just more practice, but giving more experience in the area of how would you feel if your friend were to treat you that way. We tend to think that's something you say to a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old. It's really, really something we must say often to the child who's 7 and older. Along the same lines of giving them practice in their math lessons or piano lessons, we give them practice at thinking about somebody else's feelings because developmentally they can.
I think parents find it very upsetting when a child does something mean to another child. And it's hard to not get very angry at your child for doing what's probably natural at that stage.
It is. You know, this is where my passion in this field comes into it, because I so much want people to understand limitations that children have at certain ages, cognitive limitations, emotional limitations. And I find so often in this area of thoughtfulness that we have such high expectations for young children's behaviors. And yet, not only are we not acting as thoughtful as we should be, but also the message that they're getting as we get mad at them is, I'm a disappointment, bad me. That's how they're going to internalize it. Bad me, there I am again, guilt, bad me, shame, bad me. And that's not our intention as parents. That's just how children take it in, because they have no other means to be able to take it in with a greater understanding of what we're really trying to say, which is simply, just be kinder. Just think about the other person's feelings. And so at a young age, I prefer to just see it as they can't. So if they can't, if there's that limitation, then how will we work with, how do we work with that they can't? And then I think we'll come from a simpler, more patient place, still knowing that we're teaching thoughtfulness along the way.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on thoughtfulness in children.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Robin Goldstein about children's thoughtfulness.
What's the most important thing for parents to remember about trying to raise thoughtful youngsters? Is it this figuring out what the limitations are and being aware of that? Or is there something more?
That it just takes time. And so if a parent were to wake up each morning with a post-it note in front of them that says, here I go again, the same message I sent yesterday and the day before and last week and maybe 6 times yesterday. Be nice. That hurts her feelings. Is the same message I'm going to send today, because it's a gradual, slow process of learning.
So you think it's okay to introduce this message of that hurts the other child's feelings younger than 5 or 6?
The reason I don't think it's a good idea is because we get exhausted from repeating that over and over again. I'm like, oh, you should have learned that already. You know, you're 7, you're 8. You should have learned that when you were 4. They couldn't learn it well when they were 4. They could practice it because our expectations were there. That's why children need to be so closely supervised and watched, because we're reminding them, no, that belongs to her. She was using that and isn't finished with that yet. So that we get energized after their seventh birthday, you know, or sixth birthday, you know, light the candle and then go, wow, that felt great. And then you just start on that path of how would you feel? If children are taking piano lessons, what happens if they don't practice? If children are learning multiplication tables and they don't practice, what happens? What happens if they don't get practice at how we treat other people? They're not going to gain those skills.
Now, what happens when kids are spending huge amounts of time in big groups of children so they don't have the adult focus on them? You know, pay attention, don't do this, or whatever. Are they lagging behind in those kinds of altruistic skills?
It's not that they're lagging behind, and we don't want parents on them every minute. It's just that what we hope in the child care centers, and then that's part of why we stress that quality, high quality and high standards in our child care centers is so critical and important, because teachers need to be good models for children as well. So teachers need to be able to say to someone, she's still using those blocks. And at the same time, be able to say the same thing that I would suggest parents say, I'm sorry she hurt your feelings. Let's go over here and talk about it. And children are observing the teacher and how other children are behaving as well. So they're really going to be at a very similar developmental place in terms of thoughtfulness.
There are some seasons of the year that identification with a faith community is especially prevalent. And is that something that's significant in helping children develop thoughtfulness or altruism?
You know, it can be, not necessarily, but certainly it can be, and it can be really helpful. Is it helpful for a 3-year-old or is it helpful for a 5-year-old? That may be a little bit difficult, but I do believe that developmentally from 7 on, it can be really helpful. I think anything we can do within our homes and within our communities to foster thoughtful behavior is just going to be of benefit in very positive ways to children.
So I guess it's really important to include them in these various kinds of programs churches and synagogues have to, for example, write letters to soldiers or collect for people who need clothing, winter clothing, or help make sandwiches for shelters, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I think that, and I know I keep mentioning 7 and under, but that's just where children are in terms of their developmental ability to step inside somebody else's shoes. When children are under 7, it is really important that they watch and get involved with their parents, watch their parents contribute and help and go along. They're not going to necessarily be able to put themselves in somebody else's position, but they're offering help. Let's put some toys in the toy box for those that don't have toys. And don't be too heavy on them. Just lightly do that to give them that kind of practice. But at 7 and at 10 and certainly at 12 and at 15, when they really get it, then we need to just let them know that this is part of what we value in our family, to help others. And we also often need to give them the tools to be able to find ways to help others. And so writing a soldier at 3 or 4 might be about, I just got new red shoes. That's okay. That just comes from their place. At 7 or 10, it's more, how are you? How is it fighting a war? You know, they really can show that they can put themselves in somebody else's position.
Dr. Goldstein, what resources would you recommend for our listeners? Usually, as we close, we like to give them opportunities to further pursue some of the issues we've talked about.
Okay, well, first I would suggest, that's not really a resource in a way, in the typical way that we think of it as, but to really watch your children a little more closely and really try to, there's a great ability to learn so much about children by taking your thoughts and feelings out of the picture and just trying to watch them because they're always letting you into their world. When they don't share, and then when they don't show kindness, we can ask ourselves, I wonder why, or let me watch this, or are they really capable? There's such a wide variety of resources, from Googling whatever question one has to any of the parenting books and resources that are out there. I suggest you pick up on the exact issue that you're dealing with and not ever go to just one resource, but to go to several so that you get some sort of not just advice, but perspective as well.
Well, this is obviously a subject that spans years of child rearing and years of development, but it's wonderful to have had such a good start. So, Dr. Robin Goldstein, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to tackle this important subject.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of Dr. Goldstein's latest book, The New Baby Answer Book. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 450 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. We often thank individuals and organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay, or checks or money orders can be mailed to Parents' Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.